You're listening to the Miscarriage Doula Podcast. I'm your host, Arden Cartrett. This space is meant to be a tool for you to feel less alone and to learn more about how to get through what you've been through and what you're probably going through. We'll hear diverse stories from women and men in the online space, experts and people just like you and me who are feeling the effects of miscarriage and loss in real time. This is the Miscarriage Doula Podcast. Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to jump on and make this super quick, but I wanted to let you know that with the holidays coming up, Cassia and I, who is a doula on my team, by the way, we have put together this incredible webinar for you. It's called Grieving Through the Holidays. It's a 17-minute webinar that you can get in video format, audio format, and you have access to a 20-page guidebook that serves as a workbook, but also has the transcript for the webinar and some extra information. It covers things like coping during the holiday season, setting goals, scripts for talking to people about miscarriage or answering their nosy questions, journal prompts, a deep dive into triggers, and so much more. You can get this for $15. It includes the audio, the video, and the guidebook. And you can access this or learn more if you'd like to by visiting the link in today's show notes. Okay, let's get into the episode. Hi, Alexis. Thank you so much for joining me today and for being here and being so willing to share your story. I know it's not a story that you wish you had to share. And I know that we all wish that we weren't even here listening to these episodes and finding some sort of solace there, but I'm so thankful. And I know other people are going to find support through your words. I would love for you to get started wherever you feel like your story starts, whether it's the beginning of your pregnancy. Some people start with meeting their partner. So I'll let you start your story.
Okay. So I'm glad to be here too, you know. I do really like sharing this kind of whole situation with others because there is a little bit of uniqueness to the story. I just want to start with when my husband and I got married. It was June 27th, 2020. So right after COVID started, we had a small wedding with just our wedding party. And then we didn't have our big wedding until August 8th, 2020. And I promise that's important. The date's important. Well, November 2020 comes around and we weren't trying. It was complete accidental pregnancy. But we originally just wanted to celebrate June 27th as our wedding date. August 8th would have been nice to celebrate it, but we're just like, it's just another day at this point. But we find out that we're accidentally pregnant end of November, and we find out that the due date for this baby actually would have been August 8th. So I was like, she gave us a reason to celebrate August 8th anyways. So then I get to about 12 weeks. It was the 12 weeks NT scan. We didn't qualify for the NIPT at that time. Just, you know, insurance purposes. We were just going to go through with the NT scan and call it done. This part bothers me so much because I go in for the scan and, you know, it's right after COVID. It's end of January. So everything is still pretty shut down. They're still not letting people come in with you. So it was just me at the doctor's office and she starts the scan. And she's saying, the baby is in a weird position. She has me roll onto my side to try to get a better look at, you know, the nuchal fold on the back for anyone who's not aware, just checking the fluid in the back of the neck. She says the baby's in a weird spot. So she has me roll on the side. She has me roll onto my other side. And she says, okay, I'm going to send you to the doctor's office. You're going to talk to your OB. And then we'll come back and try again because I'm not getting the images that she needs. So I end up going to the OB and it was really upsetting because I later realized that, you know, I hate to say it like this, but the the ultrasound technician basically lied. She got the images and the scans. And what happened was the fluid in the back of her neck was measuring really high. So she had found problems with the baby and just wasn't telling me, but made it sound like I was going to come back and try again. I wasn't going back in that room to try again. She just, I guess, wasn't able to tell me. But anyways, I go see my OB. And that's when she tells me that they found something wrong. And so, you know, obviously I bust out in tears. This is first pregnancy. We were anxious at first, but I got excited pretty quick. And to find out, you know, something was wrong. And I'm only 27 now. I was 26 at the time, 25 at the time. And I had no idea. I didn't know that was a thing. I've never heard of that before. So she's telling me that they're going to do some more testing. At that point, I would qualify for the NIPT. So they went ahead and did the blood work. And about 2 weeks, and also just to mention, I was on Google like crazy, looking up what it meant, you know, having the extra fluid in the back of the neck and getting all kinds of results that I was like, it could be anything. So the NIPT results came back about 2 weeks later when I was about 14 weeks. And it turns out that it was a girl. And she had Turner syndrome. And Turner syndrome, for anybody who isn't aware, it's pretty rare. It's when there's only, and she had classic Turner syndrome. So that means she was missing an X chromosome in all of her DNA and cells and stuff. So she only had one X chromosome. So she had a pretty severe form of it. And it's more like a spectrum. Some people don't even find out they have Turner syndrome until they're teenagers and they start to hit puberty. And then all of a sudden they're like, nothing is happening to me. Others find out, you know, through the NIPT. And unfortunately for our baby, it was a very severe form. She had a severe heart defect. She had calcification in the septum of her heart. She had an abnormal cerebellum from what they could tell, but I wasn't far enough along for them to really be able to tell what was wrong with her brain. She also developed a condition called high drops, which is swelling, fluid collection in more than one part of the body. So I believe she had it. It was on the back of her neck. It was under her skin, like under her arms and legs. And I believe it was around her heart. So she was really, really sick. So my husband and I were kind of faced with, you know, do we want to continue the pregnancy? Because her heart was still beating. We got to 16 weeks and 5 days. And we were seeing maternal fetal medicine after we got the diagnosis. You know, we met with the geneticist and everything. And they were saying her heart was still beating, but it was struggling. It was having a really tough time. And they were surprised that it was still beating at 16 weeks, almost 17 weeks at this time. They didn't think that she was going to continue, living much longer. So my husband and I, we made the decision to terminate because we wanted it to kind of be like on our own terms. We wanted to be like, know when it was happening. We wanted to be able to say goodbye on our own terms. And also, you know, it might not be the most popular opinion, but for our mental well-being, I don't know if we would have been able to handle going through a stillbirth, which is, you know, if we had continued much longer past that 17-week mark, then it wouldn't have been an option. We would have had to go through that. But because I was still where I was at just under 17 weeks, I still qualified for a D&E. So this was end of February at this point. So it's been a whole month of just trying to like tell myself, you know, there's a small chance she might come back from this, but the high drops will disappear. The hydroma will disappear. Just she'll recover. She'll come back. Small little bit of hope. I joined all the groups on Facebook and everything. Did all the research. But when it's discovered that early in pregnancy, it's very, very slim chance that there's going to be any kind of recovery from it, that it's just going to disappear. So February 26th, we did decide to terminate, and I went in for the D&E procedure. That was really tough. And I'll be honest, I kind of regret doing it at that time because they kind of rushed it. My birthday is March 1st. And we probably could have pushed it off a little bit longer. But I guess in my desperation a little bit, I guess, in my mind, I was like, keep it out of my birthday month. I don't want it to be associated with my birthday. I don't want to be, you know, faced with this loss on my birthday. So they kind of put a rush on it and did the procedure on February 26th. But looking back, I kind of regret that. I wish I could have spent my birthday with her. But I mean, it is what it is. You know, it doesn't mean she wasn't wanted or anything. So after our loss, after our loss, February 26th, we were told to wait 6 weeks, if we wanted to try again, which we did. We did try again. We ended up having, actually our daughter now, January 8th, which I think is so special because she was due January 7th. But I feel like she waited that extra day so she could have January 8th. Oh, goodness. I always think it's kind of like a special connection there between the two of them. So we had her January 8th this past year. So she's about to turn 9 months old. My mom and my sister are downstairs babysitting her right now. But, I almost forgot. We did name our first daughter, and we named her Aubrey. And I remember we named her after we got the NIPT results back and we found out she was a girl. And we were bouncing names around. We didn't really know what we wanted to name her. And so I told my husband, what about Aubrey? And I told him the spelling with A-U-B-R-E-E. And he's like, no, I've heard that before. And he's like, what about Aubrey with A-U-B-R-E-I-G-H? And at first I was like, because my middle name is Lee and it's spelled L-E-I-G-H. And I was like, I don't want it to be like my name. But then, you know, as the weeks went on, I was like, I really do like that. And even though we both really like the name, I talked to my therapist about it and was like, I don't know if I want to give up that name because we both really like it. And she's like, you know, some people will change the name last minute. They have a name stuck in their head that they've been planning their whole life. And all of a sudden they find out that the pregnancy is a loss and they don't want to give up that name that they've been dreaming of for forever. But my thought process was, if by some crazy miracle Aubrey had survived, I didn't just want her to have a second best name. I wanted her to have a name that we both loved. So even though she ended up being a loss, we still kept her name as Aubrey. We didn't want her to have like a second best name, like a backup name. And I was like, there's plenty of other names out there to name babies in the future. So we kept her name as Aubrey. And we actually named our daughter now River. His reasoning behind it was, you know, life kind of goes on. Kind of like, you know, the song from Pocahontas where, you know, life keeps going. You know, it's never the same. It's always changing. And for me, it was because there was a song after our loss called Rivers and Roads. That was the only song I would listen to for like a month after our loss, the only one. And it always made me think of Aubrey. So it was really important to me. So when Brian suggested that name, my husband, he was like, what about River? I'm like, you know what? I think River would be like the perfect name for her. So yeah, that's basically what happened. And, you know, I still think about her every day. And I think about, would she have been blonde like River, or blue eyes like her? What would she have been like? Would she have had brown hair like me? I always wonder those things. And, you know, we still honor her, I guess, because she would have been due August 8th. I always imagined she was a summer baby. So I always imagined what it would have been like to take her to the beach. So starting last year, when it was her due date, August 8th, 2021, we went to the beach and we took a little message in a bottle, and we didn't throw it in the ocean because, you know, there's enough stuff in the ocean. So we just buried it in the sand, and we had written a letter to her, and we spent the day at the beach. And then this past August, we didn't get to go on her due date this time because of his job. But we went end of August, and we, you know, buried another little message in the bottle in the sand. And this time we got to take River with us. So it was kind of nice. She helped. She was kicking her feet. She helped to dig, bury the bottle. It was nice. It was that's a nice trip, special. And it was a nice way to remember her.
Yeah, that's a special thing to do. And it's special to include your daughter after loss, you know, in those things. I think that parenting after loss is so different because you have this little human in front of you who is literally like a walking picture of what you've lost in the pregnancy that you've experienced. Right. And I don't think that we fully understand that until we experience it, of like, we wonder what they would have looked like, or if they would have had the same characteristics, the same personality. You know, it's just, it makes grief a little bit harder in some ways. With you having two pregnancies, both being girls, whenever you learned that River was a girl, was that triggering for you? Was that a source of anxiety, or was that actually calming and comforting?
I actually appreciated that River was going to be a girl. And part of it was because, actually, and I forgot this because I thought it was the most amazing thing. Right after our loss, you know, after I recovered from having the D&E done, you know, my mom and my sister and I, we all went to just some random thrift shop just to browse around and explore and do something. And I actually found this amazing picture just randomly walking around. And it was a picture of this little girl in a garden holding a puppy. And next to the little girl was like a little angel girl.
Aww.
So, I mean, in the picture, the girl's probably about like 7 or 8. So a little older. But one girl had, you know, like straight hair, like straight blonde hair. The little angel one. And then the one that was holding the puppy actually had like curly blonde hair. So I kind of like to think, you know, it was a sign, you know, and I thought it was really special. So when I found out that River was going to be a girl, because we qualified for the NIPT this next time around, because since Aubrey's condition was genetic, technically, it's not inherited. It's just a random thing that happens during conception. We found out it was on the paternal side, so the sperm only had one, or if the sperm didn't have the X chromosome, my egg just had the X chromosome. So it wasn't inherited, it's just a random fluke thing that happens. But technically, because it was genetic, we qualified for the NIPT the second time. So we got the NIPT done, and that's when we found out that River was going to be a girl and she didn't have Turner syndrome. And, you know, she was completely healthy. So when we found out she was a girl, I felt like that was like an even bigger sign, like in connection to that picture we found, which mind you was only $15 and I bought it. I had to, I couldn't help it. Only $15 for it. Like, yeah, I'm going to buy it. But it just made it feel even more special having that picture and then finding out that we were having another girl, because then it felt like that was definitely a sign.
Yeah. Do you still have the photo in your house today?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
Yeah, it's definitely always in the back of my mind. I'm like, I can't lose it. I got to make sure I know where it is, because we're in the process of packing and moving right now. But I'm like, I need to make sure I always know where that picture is. I cannot lose it. It's too important.
Yeah, that is so special. I love finding signs and things like that. One question I had for you with your story is, because the wait between a diagnosis and then going through with the D&E is agonizing. I've talked about it. I call it like pregnancy limbo, when you're basically like, you're walking around feeling like a ticking time bomb. And that is just the worst feeling. It's also, it sucks to have all these doctor's appointments. It sucks to be in your head, to Google things. Was there anything that helped you remain somewhat calm, or like not just completely losing your mind during those weeks of waiting? As you waited to learn more about the diagnosis, as you waited to, you know, make the decision on the D&E, was there anything that was helpful to you?
Honestly, I guess the only thing that really helped keep my mind off of the anxiety as much was I would sing. You know, doing dinner, I just put on my Spotify and just listen to music, and I would sing, and I would think about, you know, how Aubrey could, she was able to hear me, not necessarily clearly, since, you know, she was still so early. Yeah. But, you know, she could still hear at that stage. So singing while I was just doing random stuff, cleaning, cooking, whatever, and just thinking about, she can hear me right now. And, you know, holding on to just that little bit of hope, like, she can hear me, maybe, you know, she can hear me enough and things will turn around and things will be okay. And all of this will just be, you know, like a bad experience, but everything will be fine. So being able to, you know, listen to the music and being able to sing for her to hear and let her know, you know, I was like there. Yeah. And knowing that she was there. I never got to the stage where I felt movement, because that was my first pregnancy. So I never even felt flutters, I don't think. But just knowing she was there and letting her know I was there, it helped to ease some of the anxiety from it all. And I'm not a good singer. Don't get me wrong. I would only sing in my car or my house. But being able to do that for her, and for myself, I guess, it helps.
Yeah, I really like that thought. You know, even if somebody is listening and they're in a stage where maybe it's before 16, 17 weeks and they, you know, we aren't told that babies can hear us, still singing with the intent, or talking to them with the intent that you hope that they can hear you. I feel like that's so helpful mentally, because that's just, the waiting is the worst part. And then also having the hope, but knowing that, you know, doctors are telling you that hope isn't really going to help here, and we have to, you know, move forward with a plan. And it's all so difficult. So I'm sure that not only did that help her, but that also helped you connect with her in those moments.
Yeah. And I won't lie, a lot of it was Disney songs. I'm a Disney fanatic over here.
Hey, so we love it.
A lot of it was Disney songs, and I sing a lot of Disney with River now.
Yeah, and that's special. See, that's something else that, you know, you can kind of pass down to River from her big sister, which is really special. Alexis, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. I know that somebody out there listening really needed to hear this, because you know, one thing that we don't talk about enough. Well, one thing we don't talk about enough is miscarriage, but another thing is termination for medical reasons and these diagnoses and the importance of these tests, which, like you mentioned, a lot of people don't qualify for in their first pregnancy, but a lot of first pregnancies do have, you know, genetic abnormalities. And so I appreciate you sharing and educating the audience.
Yeah. And I don't mind sharing, like, even on my personal page about the termination for medical reasons. And, you know, if by some miracle, Aubrey had made it to term by some miracle, chances are she would have been born and she would have been in pain and she would have been swollen and just not able to be comfortable. And that was just something that my husband and I didn't want her to have to go through. If by some miracle she had managed to keep her heart beating.
Absolutely.
So a lot of it was for her. Some of it was for us. We just wanted to make the best decision we could in that kind of situation. Yeah. And, you know, that's a lot of what most people can do is just doing your best.
Yeah, that's parenting. You know, that was your version of parenthood with Aubrey, was making really hard decisions and saying goodbye and having to make decisions that were in her best interest, but also in yours. You know, you mentioned that part of your decision-making was that you were still eligible to have a D&E. And I know I personally relate to that thought, because in my pregnancy after loss experience, whenever I got to 16 or 17 weeks, I had that thought of, if I experience a loss now, will I have to be induced? Will I have to go through a vaginal delivery and have the trauma of seeing my baby? What would I want in that situation? And so I think that that's a real reality for a lot of people, that they have those fears. And so I know I related to that thought that you had, and I know that was a big fear for me. So I also wanted to validate that that wasn't like a small thing to consider. You know, it is your experience in this too, and you deserve to give birth in your way.
Yeah. Yes, I wish I could have seen her, but at the same time, the idea of not hearing her cry and leaving the hospital after going through that without the baby, it was too much. And we both knew that would be too much for our mental health. We did get a little keepsake box after the procedure was done. And there is a little story in there that did resonate with me a lot. It was the Brown Star story. And it basically had to do with, you know, there are the stars that come alive, the bright stars that we know of, the blue, the red, all of that. But then in between, there are the brown stars, stars that form but never fully come to life. Mm-hmm. And they're just little particles floating in space between all the other stars that did come alive. And it's kind of like they help to hold the universe together, in a sense.
Yeah.
And so even though they never got to experience full starhood, full life, they're still there and they still have a purpose and a meaning. You just might not always be able to see it. And that story in that book from that keepsake box, it stood out to me a lot. I remember crying a lot when I read that story.
Yeah, I love that. I love the way that that's put. Thank you for sharing that with us.